Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, Matt Doyle. League Cup group stages over-ish, almost. One more to go on this August 6th evening. New England at Nashville, and it's free on Apple TV. After that, we're on to the round of 32. Doyle, what's up, man? Thanks for filling in. You've become a absolutely brilliant host of this show, and now that I've thrown my back out, I feel real danger from you. I mean, this competition, I don't know if I can win it. I physically am not able.
Wiebe, I have a thought. Two podcasts.
Oh, no.
Imagine
one based on
that.
The West Coast. Nah, man, but you've been doing a killer job. It's been really enjoyable to sit back and listen to Extra Time. It's almost like, you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago when I used to sit down and listen to the dulcet tones of Simon Borg and Nick Firshaw and Greg Lawless and, yes, even you, Jason Seguini.
Back in the glory days of Extra Time. No, it's been fun hosting. It gave me a chance to empty the notebook on all of these teams and then watch as the group stage of the League's Cup played out in almost the exact opposite fashion of everything that Kaelin and I had predicted. So,
yeah, League's Cup don't care about your expectations or your predictions, your prognostications. That's not what this tournament is about. It's about unpredictability, plenty of entertainment, some golazos. We've got a full show for you here, breaking down the group stage and looking ahead to the round of 32. Of course, best thing you saw, some big sad trombones. By the way, Tano Ortiz officially out today. Rayados releasing a statement saying, yep, the time has come. I had it in the rundown as potentially, maybe that ouster was coming. And Monterrey beat me to it. Much more, too. We'll talk about the split between MLS and Liga MX clubs. The record for Major League Soccer in the group stage is better than it was last year. What do we attribute that to? Plus, with the team of the tournament, player of the tournament, go through the bracket, including what we're calling the quadrant of death. The Columbus Crew got a bye through the group stage, and their reward is Tigres and Miami in the same group as them. Only one semifinalist will come out of that group. That is crazy. And, of course, what the transfer zone brought to you mostly by Tommy Scoops. Before we get there, though, Doyle, I need you to give us a quick sell on all the previews for these games because you and Jill Sakovitz are doing absolute work on MLS Season Pass. And then we'll hit a scoops bomb, Antoine Griezmann. But the bigger news, your brilliance when it comes to match previews.
Oh, I think you're overselling it a little bit. It's just, if you want a deeper dive on any of the matches coming up, it's all on Season Pass. You just navigate to the game in question, and then on the drop down, you should be able to select a match preview. They're 3 or 4 minutes, and we try to give you a little bit of the narrative around these teams. A team like Cruz Azul, for example, there's a huge expectations, but I think they underperformed in the group stage. But then a little bit of the, you know, tactical breakdown as well. It's for the sickos. It's for the people who cannot get enough. It is for a bedridden Andrew Wiebe. Cannot move except for his arm to raise the remote control.
We don't have a TV in my bedroom, and right now I'm just laying a filthy pile of pathetic worthlessness in my bed, one arm up. This was me last night while Sasha, Miguel Gallardo, and Kevin Egan did their thing on MLS Season Pass, just headphones on, one arm up, switching arms with my phone. As it gets tired, go to the left arm, then back to the right to watch all these games. It's been a fun tournament, and you guys are killing it with these match previews. It gets me ready, dude, for every single game. I'm learning about Liga MX as we go and picking up information I already knew from last year and from the many years before it. It's been fun, but before we get to the nitty-gritty there, Tommy Scoops, Tom Bogert, as he often does, disrupted our rundown. Antoine Griezmann to LAFC now? Or in the winter or next summer? Tom says it's a matter of when, not if, according to the sources he talks to. Griezmann is out of contract with Atletico Madrid next summer, but according to Tom, has an $11 million release clause right now. Now, of course, if you trigger that clause, then the option goes to the player, and Griezmann would have to say goodbye to a place where he is super valued, has been a key contributor, if not something surpassing that for many, many years. So it could happen now, especially if Julian Alvarez comes into Atletico. Matt, should it happen now? Should we try to manifest this thing? Antoine Griezmann to LAFC this freaking summer?
Yes. Yeah, you have a chance to get still one of the best attackers in the world at the tail end of his prime. Antoine Griezmann has kept himself incredibly fit, which is why he's still such a crucial piece for Atleti. But as you said, if they bring in Julian Alvarez, they will have to make some decisions. And look, he's got the buyout in his contract for a reason. And LAFC have an open DP slot. They have Denny Bouanga as a DP, Olivier Giroud as a DP, and they have the room to add Antoine Griezmann. And if you can do that, you should. You just should. And I understand that they'll probably negotiate a little bit. The MLS transfer window is open for about another week. And, you know, maybe the idea is you give Atleti time to bring Alvarez in and then look at their books and decide how desperate they are to move Griezmann's contract. And maybe if you do that, then you're able to get the number down from 11 million to 8.5 million, something like that. So there's not a rush in terms of we need to get it done this minute, but they should absolutely try to get it done before the window closes, because then you're going into the stretch run and potentially the semifinals of the League's Cup with still one of the best attackers in the entire world. You're going into that part of the League's Cup and into the stretch run with a front three of an MVP caliber Denny Bouanga, Olivier Giroud, who is one of the best center forwards of the past 15 years, and Antoine Griezmann. It's absurd. It's probably irresistible. And it is the type of front three that will win trophies, and that's the name of the game. So, yeah, it's on the table. Why wait till winter? Get it done now.
Doyle, it feels to me like LAFC learned a lesson from that Bale transfer window. And we're like, well, if that felt big at the time, why don't we just blow that straight out the water? Like, I mean, Giroud and Griezmann at the same time. I just went and looked at Griezmann's stats just to remind myself of the level that he's at and continues to be at. For Atletico last season, between La Liga and Champions League, how many goals do you think he scored?
I'll say 20.
22. Combined goals and assists between those two, 29, plus tack on three more in the Supercopa and Copa del Rey. The year before that in La Liga, 15 goals. The year before that was hurt. But the year before that, 13. I mean, you're talking about a guy that comes into MLS. Your expectations for him, goals plus assists, have to be in the... I mean, have to be in the like 25 to 30 range combined goals and assists full season.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, he would be
for sure.
He would be the second best player in MLS behind only the guy who's the greatest player of all time. That's Antoine Griezmann's level. It's not often that MLS teams have a chance at a guy like this while he is still in his prime. And as the numbers you rattled off just showed, he is still in his prime. This is not a guy who is, you know, sort of at the very end of his career. It's like he's got five more seasons.
No, he's been playing 3,500 minutes the last 2 years, no sweat, while doing it for France too. And does he want to come? I don't know. Let's check Instagram, see the comments, or we can listen to Olivier Giroud, who told the media when he was being introduced in LA, when he saw the news, he being Antoine Griezmann, when he saw the news I signed for LAFC, he was a bit jealous. I texted him when I saw he was linked with the club. He told me, let's see. Nice little recruiting pipeline LAFC got going there. Bring in Hugo. He likes life in LA. Starts calling his boys. Here they come. All right, man.
The thing, one more thing, because you compared it to the Bale signing, and I understand why. And obviously, the Bale signing ultimately worked out. It's a very different thing.
I agree.
Bale was barely playing soccer at that point, and he barely played for LAFC. And on top of it, I actually think that summer window in 2022 made LAFC worse. The pieces didn't fit. Giroud and Griezmann, if that's what they had, these guys fit perfectly. And like, yeah, it's a bummer for Mateus Bogusz and Kike Oliveira because now those guys are backups. But that's what it is to play at a big club. Sometimes a world-class player comes in and you're fighting for minutes now. Just on talent, the pieces fit together. Just on talent, it makes LAFC better. But also in terms of chemistry, I have a hard time imagining this doing anything except turning LAFC into an absolute thundering juggernaut.
I don't know, man. How do you think Giroud and Griezmann will fit in together?
Yeah, right? Wouldn't win anything, I'm sure.
We're trying to get some data on that ASAP. We'll let you know on the next show. All right, let's dive into Leagues Cup, and we'll keep our eyes on Tommy Scoops' Twitter feed and on Gimme Sport, because that's where all the news is firing for Major League Soccer. What's the best thing you saw in the group stage of Leagues Cup? Doyle, take us away.
Ricky's through ball. So we'll go to the other LA team. Ricky Pooch is just one of my favorite players in the league to watch because he's such a through ball artist. And the one he hit on the Galaxy's first goal against Chivas was absolutely absurd. Like his understanding of the geometry of the field, not just the geometry in terms of static, but the way it was going to change.
Yes.
And he just plays it perfectly through two lines. I think he cut out 9 Chivas defenders with one ball. And of course, it ends up with a square ball to Paintsil for the tap in. It was actually similar to the ball Ricky played against the Quakes, except on that one, the geometry was right for him to loop it over the top into the run from Miki Yamani, who then pulled it across for that. I think that was the game winner. But like that pass he hit against Chivas was special. That was a special player understanding things at a level that nobody else on the field could quite match, and it resulted in a goal. Deserved.
Sometimes
goal.
Sometimes it feels to me like the run invites the through ball. Right,
oh, yeah.
Like that you see the run, and then this was the opposite. Mauricio Cuevas, who was playing wing back because the Galaxy went to a little bit different shape in this game with 3 center backs and 2 wing backs, and Amiro Garces, by the way, got his debut. I think he had to come off injured, but showed some signs and some youth in this as well. But it seemed like Cuevas was like waiting, like kind of hesitating a bit, and like Ricky's coming toward that sideline, and it's almost like you can just imagine him being like, and go. And go, like, and go, yeah. And go. And then Cuevas is like, okay, yeah, okay, I'm going to go. And bang, right through those points. And this is Ricky in a nutshell. Like, nobody else sees that. Nobody else can do that. And he makes it look routine and somewhat easy as something like that can look. But then also, Doyle, there's all these other moments in the game where he was losing the ball in bad positions and dropping back too far. And you're just like, Ricky, what are you doing? And then he does that, and you're like, oh, yeah, okay. Got it. That's why you got to put up with some of the rougher moments of the Ricky Pooch experience, because the beautiful ones are just, they're life-changing sometimes in their brilliance. I don't know if it's life-changing, but for Cincinnati, that comeback was epic. That's going to be the best thing I saw. They're not dead until they're dead, I guess, and they're also really into hair dye, but it looked like New York City, Doyle, was just going to walk away with the group, and that was going to be bad news bears for Cincy. They were going to have to go down to the quadrant of death with the Crew and Tigres and Inter Miami. And then all of a sudden, Pat Noonan goes to the bench, makes the right choices. Here come the cavalry. Ends up being a 4-2 win, and Sergio Santos is double proposing to his now fiance, but long-term life partner. I thought they were already married, but I guess not, and he's doing it in green hair, and you know, Yamil Assad is the truth once again, and we'll talk about that more in our player of the tournament so far. But that was just a really fun comeback to watch. And while I was watching that, I was also flipping back and forth and managed to land on Toluca Sporting Kansas City right before Stephen Afrifa hit launch. He had some really nice moments in the first half, none better than that goal he scored. Are we at a point now where, one, undoubtedly Afrifa's got to be playing? Like, this dude's a starter for Kansas City. He's probably the future on that left wing. And two, he's pushing his way into like, okay, this might be a star via the super draft sort of situation.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely need more data. But in terms of giving Sporting KC a dose of what they needed, which is penetration off the ball, which is a threat that has gravity, an off-ball threat that has gravity and forces the opposing back line to be reactive to that. Afrifa is a lot of what the doctor ordered on the left side primarily so far. And then him with Willy Agata up top, it just changed the complexion of the team in terms of what they're able to do with the ball, because those two guys are so smart and unselfish and dynamic off the ball. And it's reminding me a little bit of 2022, when midway through the season they were absolutely dead and they were like, oh, there's nothing to take from this year. There's not even a silver lining. It's like, they're finding the silver lining now. Like, they might have two of the three frontline starters for the future nailed on, one that they got on the cheap, via a transfer in Agata, and the other, as you said, via the super draft. We need more data. It's too early to say this is definite, but like, every sign that we get from these two guys together is encouraging. I still think the best outcome is that this happens with Daniel Shallowy also rediscovering himself, and you could maybe play Afrifa on the right side, and Shallowy becomes kind of a playmaking inverted winger that we've seen from him in the past. But I mean, Shallowy's gone MIA for most of the year, so it's tough, but silver lining at the very least.
The goal by Afrifa is probably a data point we're not going to see on the regular from him. Cutting it on the right foot, and the way that thing dipped and dove up so high, then down to hit the crossbar and go under. I mean, that is like a once in a lifetime goal. Congratulations to him for putting that one on the board. But Kansas City are sadly losers against Toluca. So yeah. All right, let's talk biggest sad trombone. Wah, wah. You going Liga MX or MLS? Who gets it?
I'm going MLS. I'm going RSL. I thought this was a team that could have made some noise, and with the right acquisition, which they might have made, could maybe have won it. And all they had to do was avoid getting thumped against Houston. A one goal loss or less, or a draw or a win, obviously, and RSL would have been through into the round of 32. Instead, they just got handled. They got absolutely handled by Houston, which is colossally disappointing, because RSL have had some losses this year, but they haven't really gotten handled like that. They haven't gotten pulled apart and sort of second best to every 50-50, and that was a lot of it. Now, granted, Andrew Tarbell had himself a day in goal for Houston. He was fantastic. Keeping the ball out of the back of the net. So it's not like RSL laid over and died, but they were just clearly second best in almost every facet of the game, RSL were. And it was disappointing, because if they had gotten through, we see Chicho Arango back from the start, and then we also probably see the new DP number 10 they got, Diogo Goncalves, from Copenhagen, a former Portuguese internet. He has like a similar career path as Hani Mukhtar, where, remember, Hani was a German international and never quite fit in to any of the teams he was on in Germany, but then went to Denmark and became the best player in the league. Well, Goncalves has kind of the same pathway, except for Portugal. He just never quite fit anywhere in Portugal. I think one of his clubs was playing him as a right back, and over the past couple of years he came to FC Copenhagen, was arguably the best player in the Danish league last year, and he looks like the exact perfect number 10 for this team, because he's super active off the ball. He gets on the ball a decent amount, but it's not like he's running the game. So he still functions as a number 10 in spurts, but he's almost more of a second forward, which then allows Diego Luna to cut inside from that left wing and become the number 10, which is the sort of build-out pattern that we've seen from RSL all season long. I really wanted to see this on the field sooner than the end of August, but because RSL were eliminated, we're not going to see this for a couple of weeks now. It's a bummer.
Yeah, the highlights, of course, punctuated by rousing trance music. Show him coming in off the right a lot onto a left foot and being very goal dangerous. very focused on finding moments for himself, but also with final ball. And I think with Andrés Gómez on the right, sort of occupying that wide channel, you don't want somebody who wants to get out there. You want somebody who's going to occupy a different space and make different runs and, you know, pull defenders inside to isolate Gómez as well. So, like, this looks like a huge signing. A little bit more than $3 million for a 27-year-old who had a really good season last year for the best team historically in Denmark. That seems like a really, really good swing for Al Salt Lake. Their ambition isn't always, hey, we're going to go spend $10 million, but they have spent a lot of really, really good, like, $2 to $6 million fees over the last 3 years, and this looks like it could be another example of that guy. Hopefully it's the missing piece. Now, there's a similar sad trombone for me, as you were talking about, man, I would love to see Diogo Gonçalves play in Leagues Cup. Yeah, I would love to see Alexei Marinchuk play in Leagues Cup as well. Like, Atlanta United, their exit, that is a sad trombone, but I don't think anybody is rivaling Rayados for the ultimate sad trombone. I mean, I'm talking mariachi band right here, just mourning the death of a giant. I mean, this is the second year in a row. Is it 2 years in a row? I mean, I know Tuca Ferretti didn't get fired immediately after Leagues Cup, but there was an element of, like, this team fell short again.
Yeah. I mean, last year, remember, Monterrey were awesome in the group stage and then beat the brakes off of LAFC. LAFC had taken a 2-0 lead, and then Monterrey came roaring back and made it all the way to the semifinals before they bowed out and then lost in the third place game to Philly. But it...
I'm sorry, Tuca was Cruz Azul. I was like, yeah, I know somebody lost their job off this last year.
Yeah, Tuca was Cruz Azul. But it never quite clicked for Rayados, you could argue, after the group stage of Leagues Cup. Like, they looked like a juggernaut, and they never rediscovered that in the aftermath. In this one, they never even got to that point. They just, to go out the way they went out is a shock for a team that spends more than any other team in North America. Like, they're not the traditional Grandes. They're a newish team. And look, they are still much more successful than three of the traditional Grandes in Pumas and Chivas and Cruz Azul. But they're not narrowing the gap in terms of the collective perception of what they are as a team the way, like, Tigres are. Like, there's a respect for Tigres that doesn't exist for Rayados.
And to me, just talking to folks that follow the league and live the league, like, that is probably the bigger force than comparing them to, you know, the giants like Cruz Azul and you know, Pumas, et cetera, and Chivas. It's more the regio. It's more in city. Like, everybody I talk to is like, hey, man, Monterrey is like a different place. They've got all their own stuff and their own media, their own sort of attitudes, their own perception of themselves and the rest of Mexico. And it truly is, like, within that, you know, within that city, you're looking across the aisle and Tigres is through. And Tigres seems to get the job done when, you know, put to it. And Rayados, certainly teams under Tano Ortiz, whether it's Rayados or Club America before that, weren't able to do this. So his job was gone. Now, I did think it was poetic that Rogelio Funes Mori scored the tying goal to get the game to PKs. That was poetic. I mean, it seems like Pumas is trying to get rid of him, but the Monterrey legend just adding insult to injury. He didn't celebrate it, but that doesn't take the goal off the board. The other one then is Chivas. Like, you know, as a fan of this tournament who just wants to see the most entertaining round of 32 and beyond, because I love the group stage, but we all understand, like, the knockout rounds is really where it's at. To not have Rayados or Chivas, one, just for the fan support. Two, for the level of player that they both have. Three, for the intrigue of an MLS Rayados or MLS Chivas matchup in the knockout rounds. We get robbed of both? I mean, robbed. I guess they robbed themselves. Chivas, they just can't even get it going at all in this tournament. They haven't won a game in 2 years.
Yeah, they lost both of these in penalties to the Quakes and then the Galaxy. Last year, they got beat just straight up in both group stage games. Chivas are giants in name only. They are not a successful club over the past half century. I looked at it, you know, as I said, like, the Mexican press likes to have a lot of fun with Rayados, calling them chokers. In the past 15 years, Rayados have 10 trophies and Chivas have 5. in the past 50 years, Rayados have 14 trophies and Chivas have 8. They have a giant fan base. They are the second biggest club in terms of fan base in North America. But in terms of results, they're a mid-table club at best, and they really haven't been a threat to win much since Pilato Almeida left 7 years ago now. So it's I can't say I'm particularly surprised that they went out the way they did. I thought they were second best against San Jose. I thought they played better against the Galaxy, but it's not like they were irresistibly great in that game. And now they're gone.
The sirens marking the exit of Chivas Guadalajara and Rayados. All right, before we get to some superlatives here, every single show we do, we throw up the graphic, and I know I'm like other people, which is you just kind of want to know. Leagues Cup is about competition between MLS and Liga MX. I mean, that's sort of the basis of the whole thing. So you want to see a head-to-head. Right now, MLS leading Liga MX, 19 wins to 11. Of course, that is with shootouts included, draws and regulation. So we be adjusted, Doyle. It's 13 wins for MLS, 7 losses, and 10 draws. That comparatively to 2023, that's the only data we have. Liga MX had 16 wins to 14. We be adjusted 13, 12, and 5 draws in that competition.
To be fair, that's 2023 group stage only.
Yes, and this is group stage only that we're on right now. And the final group stage game is New England-Nashville, so it won't account for that. So we're fully sort of 30 games, same sort of sample size. What does it say to you that MLS has this? I think you could even call it almost a commanding lead, given 13 wins and 7 losses in regulation. What does that mean to you?
I think it's just indicative of the middle of the pack in MLS coming up a little bit more. I think teams maybe made better use of their U22 initiative guys than we've seen in the past. I think there are, honestly, I think there are better chief soccer officers in this league. There are more teams that are well run. I had out of nowhere a front office type hit me up the other day and say, there are no dumb teams I can dump my bad players on anymore, which is like pretty like that is a telling thing. And so the bottom of MLS and the middle of MLS have both gotten tougher to beat. And the top of MLS, you have, look, we've talked about it. Teams like Columbus, Cincinnati, Miami,
LAFC,
LAFC, maybe the four best teams in MLS history, like just in terms of pure talent. So it's coming up in MLS, and at the same time, there's just been a stratification in Liga MX. I talked about it last week with Rodolfo Landeros, who was good enough to come on for 20-25 minutes, talking about how the middle of the pack in Liga MX hasn't been able to keep up with those giants that we have opened this show talking so much about. So I think it's just sort of solidifying what we've seen with our own eyes. And it's going to put pressure on those middle of the pack teams in Liga MX to build smarter and maybe find a way to invest more as well.
Look, we hadn't seen, and this was one of the joys of the tournament for all of us who are deep down this hole, we hadn't seen like middle class / lower class MLS teams and Liga MX teams play.
Yep.
Not in competitive games. We'd seen it in some friendlies. We'd seen it, preseasons gone by, etc. But we hadn't seen the Necaxas of the world or the Juarez's or the Mazatlans take on the, let's just throw some names out there, the New Englands or the San Jose's, etc. So we're getting this little taste and this difference. And, I think MLS is standing up. Now, it makes sense that they should. Like, I don't actually put this disparity down and be like, hey, trumpet that. MLS rules. Like, this is going to be the indication of where things are going. Like, no, you should win games at home. Like, when you play home games over the years, how hard was it for MLS teams to go to Mexico? How hard is it still for MLS teams to go to Mexico in a competitive environment? Like, you should have a home field advantage. Congratulations for having something that you should have. You should also have an advantage when it comes to the period of the calendar. Like, we as MLS observers can't sit around after a CONCACAF Champions League or Cup or fill in the year loss right after preseason or 3 or 4 weeks into the season and be like, oh, well, you know, just it feels unfair because of where we are at our season. And that not turn around and give that same benefit of the doubt to Liga MX. We're in the exact same place. So there are a lot of forces sort of swirling around creating this here. And it's all fine. It's something to be very proud of if you're Major League Soccer. This is progress. This is well done. But I still think ultimately what we want is progress at the very top, right, Doyle? To speak to your stratification, it's, hey, you beat Rayados, you beat Tigres, you beat America, you beat Toluca, you beat title caliber teams in Liga MX in big leverage moments, in semifinals, in finals, in back and forth quarterfinals, home and away. And in many ways, Leagues Cup is a way to prepare our teams for those moments because more and more of them are getting into CONCACAF Champions Cup with the expansion of the tournament. So, yeah, is it fun for MLS and MLS fans and players and coaches? And I'm sure it's fun to get the bonuses that come with these wins as well. Yeah, is it completely indicative? Yeah, I'm not as sure of that. Right now, 7 Liga MX teams are out. We mentioned Monterrey and Chivas. León are out after a penalty shootout loss to the Rapids. Last night, Tijuana are out, LAFC and Vancouver moving on. In that group, Querétaro are out, San Luis out, and Puebla are out. So, again, other than Monterrey and Chivas, León and Tijuana sort of in that middle class, Querétaro, San Luis, and Puebla are three teams you would expect to go out in this competition. Out for MLS, Dallas, Chicago, Minnesota, Real Salt Lake, Red Bulls, Atlanta United, Charlotte, and one of New England or Nashville. Any thoughts here to clean this up before we hit our team of the tournament?
Yeah, you hit on something, as you were talking about MLS teams testing themselves against the best and finding out what the level is and how to, how to match that level that we see from the Grandes and the Gigantes and all that. And it brought me back to, when did we really know it was happening with the Columbus Crew last year? And it was July 31st when they beat Club America 4-1. Club America had just crushed St. Louis City 4-0, and granted that wasn't a full strength St. Louis side, but we had seen signs from Columbus last year by the middle of the season that they were going to be a very good team. But that win over Club America was the one that I think put everybody on notice that this was a team that could do something special down into the stretch run and into the playoffs. And they've been, those are the two best teams in North America since that moment, as far as I'm concerned. I know, no disrespect to Pachuca, who CONCACAF Champions Cup, they won it fair and square. But, Pachuca will get their chance to prove it against Tigres that they belong in that discussion as well.
No doubt about it. And look, America and Columbus we'll talk about in a second, but there are two giants we just haven't seen yet in Leagues Cup. Who's the team of the tournament for you? And it doesn't have to be super traditional. I think Austin probably deserve this title based on what they did and what they did comparative to expectations against Pumas in Monterrey. So, hey, Austin fans, you got your due right here. We've talked about you. More things have happened in the tournament. All that said, remove Austin from your consideration, team of the tournament.
It's Portland for the fact that they won both of their games and the way they won both of their games, just crushing what we both think is a pretty good Colorado team. And beating Club León, who are struggling a little bit. Club León haven't been great to open the Apertura, but they're never pushovers. They beat them 2-1 on a couple of set pieces. And when you're able to win games in different ways against pretty good competition, you're starting to talk about a team that has the ability to maybe win a trophy. And with Portland, I don't have any question about their top-end attacking talent. Evander has shown he is, as our friend Brad says, he is an MVP-caliber player, and he has shown that so far. Jonathan Rodriguez has been excellent. Felipe Mora has been excellent. Santi Moreno and Anthony, who have been kind of trading starting roles at that right wing, they've both been super valuable. But as they start to figure out the rest of the stuff, David Oshala and Eric Williamson both finally being healthy, Christian Paredes too, so that Phil Neville has some different cards to play in central midfield. The ability to go with super low and conservative wing or fullbacks and make it a traditional back four. And when I say traditional, I mean like 1990s style, where these guys do not overlap. That is something different. But then at the same time, you could put Juan David Mosquera and Bravo out there, and you have suddenly two super attacking fullbacks, and they could overwhelm you with numbers going forward that way. It's starting to look more complete, and it's starting to look scary in a really good way, and in a way that we haven't seen from the Timbers. And I don't think we've seen this complete a version of the Timbers since they won the MLS's back tournament 4 years ago.
There were signs of this coming a few months ago when Phil made that switch. And I think a lot of it was sort of by necessity, just based on the goals that they were allowing, one, but also on, I believe if I remember right, an injury to Claudio Bravo.
Yep.
And he moved Kamal Miller out wide, if I'm recollecting this all right. And then it was just like, oh, yeah, we don't have to introduce sort of this additional level of risk to be dangerous. We can actually kind of tweak the equation a little bit and just make it, for lack of a better word, safer for us to let our best players do what they're best at. In yep. the attacking part of the field as well, and just cover things up defensively. And it's really working for Phil Neville right now. Well done. Well done. I'm going to go, you know, Austin is the obvious one, and they are my team of the tournament so far. I think low-key Tigres should get a shout here as well for the way mm-hmm. they navigated their group. I mean, Pueblo was always going to be up against it, against Miami and Tigres, but to have what amounts to a final in your group stage game against Miami, and I know, look, Suarez was rested for it, et cetera, but Miami still put out a good team. It just feels to me like Tigres are in prime Tigres form, which is you're going to watch their games and you're not going to look at the whole and be like, wow, they're going to blow you away. You're going to look at the three moments that are always the moments that change games, and Tigres is going to make all three of them. And it looks like you might be having a health event right now.
I'm watching the Olympic mile, the 1500 right now, and it was just like the most amazing race I've ever seen. I've fallen in love with track again. It happens every 4 years during the Olympics. I fall in love with track, but that was amazing. Make sure you watch the 1500 later, Weeby. It was great.
I will have to do that. My sons are also locked in. We were watching the high jumping and their minds were completely blown that people could hoist their bodies that high into the air and the technique and everything else. The Ukrainian high jumper, she gets showtime. Up there. That's yeah, freaking showtime. There. That was amazing. Yeah. So I'm going to give Tigres a shout here. What would you make of their win against Inter Miami?
So I got a couple of people dropping into my DMs just talking about how much they loved watching that game. Just like sometimes it's fun to watch a game where you don't have a rooting interest and just be completely enveloped in how high a level the teams hit. And I think that's what we got in that game. I thought, I thought Julian Gressel struggled a little bit, and that was a little bit obvious. But other than that, these two teams were just so good, and it says something about Tigres that they can be that good when they're not necessarily starting their whole group. And to be fair, same of Inter Miami. That was not the full group for Inter Miami, but it felt like a statement win. And we know that Tigres have been the best team on the continent for the past 15 years. What they haven't done a lot is win continental titles. And that has frustrated them, frustrated their fan base. And this great group of players, spearheaded by André-Pierre Gignac, any title that is contested across the border is going to mean a lot to them. So I think they're coming after it real hard. I think they're going to want this one. I still am picking Columbus, but God, that quadrant is absolutely brutal.
When you don't get APG, I think it gives you an opportunity to watch Tigres in a different way, because at least for me, and I'm not like an every week watcher, so Liga MX fans are going to be like, yeah, you would, Weeby, you would focus on APG. But when you see him every once in a while, it's easy for his sort of presence and ability and knack for the moment to sort of overshadow everyone else. And you know the names, you know the talent, but then when you watch like Nico Ibañez, for instance, for a full game without APG to sort of suck up any of that oxygen. Or, you know, you see Gurriarán and Carioca and the way that they run a midfield, or, you know, just Juan Brunetta, period. And the way he struck the ball in that game is, I don't know if I'll ever see that sort of technique on a volley ever again.
It's absurd.
It gives you really good perspective, as does calling or watching any of the games of these giant clubs in Mexico. It gives you a little perspective because you're like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now let's check the bench. Three there, designated player, quality players. Like, period. Tigres are just that stacked up. And that's why the group with the crew is so fascinating.
And we'll I think part of the difference between Tigres and Rayados is Tigres have been patient in integrating the new players that they bring in. They've been patient in integrating them into the group and understanding what their core and their focal point is. And obviously that's Gignac, but it's also been that deep-lying central midfield, which has been so good for so long. And bringing in pieces around that and giving them time to sort of let their strengths as players resonate with the collective. I don't see that from Monterrey.
Can I throw something out at you on that I've just been thinking about throughout this tournament as I compare the two? And again, we'll say it again, that's just what gets done with Tigres and Monterrey. There are, in my mind, like lightning rods within this Tigres team that are just, you cannot, like, they're going to take it all the pressure, all the talk, all the everything, and they're just going to sort of absorb it, and not just that, maybe grow stronger from it. I mean, Gignac is one of them. Nahu is for sure one of them now that he's back in the mix. That second save on Campana after Campana scores, and then the look between the two, that's just classic Nahu, and I love it. I mean, Guido Pizarro and Diego Reyes on the back line, they're just, it feels like there's a lot of guys within that team that are just sort of like, yeah, we can deal with this. Like, yeah, when the moment comes, our minds are going to be right. We're not going to succumb to this crushing pressure. And it just hasn't been the same on the other side. Look, Monterrey was missing Canales because of injury. Oliver Torres, their big signing from Sevilla, is still not there. But I'm with you. It just feels like Tigres are a little bit more resilient in those big moments. All right, player of the tournament. Oh, by the way, speaking of, just one guy I have to shout out. I'm just going to say his name. We can move on if you want. Yannick Bright. Inter Miami are using an international spot on Yannick Bright. And it's worth it.
1,000% worth it. Now, they play differently when he's out there compared to when Busquets is out there.
Okay,
but well, that would be true.
Say that sentence again. Like,
that would be true of literally any defensive midfielder in the world. Busquets has always been one of one. They're a little more direct. He's not going to break lines a ton with his passing, but his reading of the game, his ability to win the ball and play quickly 2 feet to the attackers, it's given them a sort of like they transition from phases to play really quickly when he's out there. And that is the number one thing that college midfielders struggle with in MLS, is transitioning from defense to offense, transitioning from counterattack to possession. They do all that really well when he's out there. He's going to be wearing Inter Miami pink for a long time, I think.
All right, player of the tournament. I'll get us started here. I got some options. Federico Bernardeschi has been, absolutely brilliant in this tournament the entire year. Watching him is a complete joy, Matt. Like,
yeah.
And that was not always something that we were saying. So I want to give him his shout out here. Ramiro Henrique is another guy that, I'm telling you, I didn't see it.
Like Kevin Egan did. Our guy
Kevin Egan has been on him for a minute. He's got goals in 6 straight games. There's an Orlando record. The goal that he scored against San Luis, he starts the play, if I remember right, by winning the ball, distributing, and then it's a late run into the box. And hey, your boy Martin Ojeda to Facu Torres, who's found a real good vein of form, right to the feet of the best finisher in purple, which is now Ramiro Henrique. Like, I don't want to do this, but Luis Muriel just continues to be a baffling. How could they have possibly made this signing committed for so long deal to me for Orlando City? But that's a conversation for another day. But I'm going to give a combo player of the tournament nod to Yamil Assad. He's freaking back, baby. And Chidozie Awuzie. Chidozie Awuzie has been really good off the plane.
Oh, that ball
straight off the plane, dude.
To you, Yakubo, that, like, he broke two lines the Owaziam did to Kubo's feet, and then he took a filthy touch, and that was the game winning goal.
I believe
last
so.
Night, right?
I yeah. believe so. Yep.
He's been great.
Right into the middle of the back three. We've been screaming it from the mountaintop. They need a veteran guy who can communicate, be a distributor, and sit in the middle because Matt Miazga is not coming back anytime soon. Owaziam looks like that guy straight off the bat. I think the best goal of the entire night for Cincinnati is Yamil Assad rumbling, bumbling, Leo Messian all the way down the field for the finish. Like, Yamil Assad was it was over, Doyle. Yamil Assad was like, will Atlanta sign him again sort of joke in MLS. Had yeah. bounced all around, had never had the success he had during prime Tata years. He is he scored goals in both games. He's rediscovering that form. He is a very, very viable left wing back option. It's not just viable. It's like
he's a starter now, man.
Yeah, it's above average returns.
Yep. He's been he for the first time in 6 years, he looks like the guy that he was in Atlanta. It is a pretty wonderful rebirth because I didn't understand why he dropped off so hard after
that. It never made sense.
It wasn't just a Frank DeBoer thing. It was every other stop, he just looked like a fraction of the player he was. And, you know, good job on Chris Albright and Pat Noonan for unlocking this talent and putting him in a position where he can affect the game at such a high level as he did it wasn't technically a must-win game, but it was to come away with anything less than a win last night was kind of a disaster.
It would have been Cincinnati. A disaster. Absolutely would have been a disaster. Now, they've done this without Lucho. And on the point that we're talking about with Assad, I think before we move on, I think this is like one of the preeminent feathers in the cap of Cincinnati and their transition from trash, as Ben Bear would put it, to like league model, is that when players arrive, they improve. I mean,
yeah.
Look, it's Orishano this year, who had been struggling to get as much run as he would have wanted now as a game changer. It's obviously Barrial from before that. It's Kubo. It is, I mean, I think Boucha this year, his progression has been incredible. And the goal he scored was, I mean, that was crazy high quality. Like, Alvis Powell, I think, is a good example of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, turning into one of those three center backs. And the way Powell wins physical battles is, I mean, he just outsmarts attackers. Then he's like, yeah, but I'm also faster than you. So, like, you're kind of hosed. There's every once in a while a bad decision-making process there. But throughout the squad, it just seems like guys get to Cincinnati and improve. And they'll need to in the round of 32, just like everybody else. It's about to ramp up. First thing, before we do a quick look at the bracket, I still have Austin fans in my mentions yelling at me that I'm being real mean about not giving them any sympathy for the fact that they have to go on the road to LAFC, despite the fact that they won their group. And the Galaxy are frustrated about this too. They win their group, they'll go to Seattle. Mark Delgado said, yeah, it makes no sense. A lot of people are saying that to me. This doesn't make any sense. Does it make sense to you? Before I even go into my spiel, do you understand why and do you agree with the idea that a group winner could go on the road in the round of 32?
Yeah, I mean, the way it's sorted is by how you did in the regular season. The regular season determines your seeding in this tournament.
So in a tournament setting, something that determines your seeding prior to that tournament starting, like let's say it's the World Cup, let's say it's, I don't know, Copa America, whatever. What would you call that? What's a word for that? Qualifying. It's called qualifying, people. And basically every single tournament in the world has qualifying. Yeah. So you can't complain, in my opinion, about where you sit in qualifying when qualifying was your own doing. Like, congratulations for beating Pumas and Monterrey. That's an incredible accomplishment. I say, well, what's the point of us doing that? So you're not eliminated, Austin. You were supposed to be roadkill. You were the third seed in the group. You were supposed to be a team that the other two teams had an advantage over. And because of the way hubs worked, you actually got two home games out of it. Same thing for you. Well, not same for LA, because they had to go to San Jose. So LA makes less sense in that sort of context. But it's qualifying, man. Like, this is the deal. There's a reason why the Mexican teams got the hubs that they got. There's a reason why the Crew get the advantage they get through the final. It's because they earned it. And so when you don't get it because you didn't earn it, I get that you're frustrated that your success in two games didn't equate to the result that you wanted, but it was the 34 games last year that determined your place in the pecking order. that does it now. And oh, by the way, you can't just say in round of 32, we're going to throw those seeding out the window because you won your group. And I understand why your logic would be, hey, number one should get a host against number two. Okay, well, then how do you account for Hubs getting an advantage there? How do you account for the crew? Well, it's all on qualification and seeding. So for fairness, you have to apply that all the way across the board. Rant over. What's the best matchup in the round of 32 for you, Doe?
There's a few to choose from, but the one I got my eye on is Toluca versus Houston. Toluca, to me, looked like a real threat to win this thing. I know they weren't great last night, but they were really good, even without Paulinho, who has been maybe the acquisition of the season so far in Liga MX. They have, I think, balance up and down the field with that roster that they have. And they're a team that are kind of looking to get back to their winning ways. From the late 90s to 2010, like, this was the best team in Liga MX in terms of total trophies won. And they haven't been that for a while now, but they have like guys like Baeza and Marcel Ruiz, the young Mexican international in central midfield. They've been fantastic. Jesus Angulo's been, I think, pretty good. Maxi Araujo on the left wing. And then even without Paulinho, they had Robert Morales, who's a Paraguayan international.
He was their big signing, if I remember correctly, right before League's Cup last year.
Correct. Look, Toluca were never a team that spent a lot of money, but they have found a way to try to keep up with those gigantes that we've been talking about. And they're starting to play like it again. I think they're going to win something this year. I don't know whether it's Leagues Cup or the Apertura or the Copa MX, but this group is not going to leave 2024 without a trophy of some sort. And then on the flip side, it's what we talked about from literally this time last year with Houston. It's like, oh man, if they had a really high level number nine and an attacking left winger who can maybe beat guys off the dribble and score a few goals, like, this team is probably as good as anybody in MLS. And the midfield is just as good as last year's, I think, except a little bit deeper now because they got Latif Blessing, and with Coco Karaskia out, Blessing fills in as that sort of false right winger, so they can still form that box midfield, create that central overload, and open up the entire right flank for Griff Dorsey on the overlap. The back line is better because Maciel is so good at left center back that it, like, year over year, he has improved so much. But they have Ezequiel Ponce and Lawrence Anali. And Ponce hasn't officially scored a goal, though I think he could have maybe gotten credit for that third one. He's looked good. Anali has looked awesome. Anali has looked like the German Albert Elis. He's been awesome in very limited minutes so far. But, like, Houston did the thing that we had been asking for them to do. And I think that this is a team very much a dark horse contender to win this tournament.
I had just rolled over to Google Translate because I immediately needed to know what the German word for panther is. It's telling me it's panther. And I don't accept that. I don't accept that. We need a better nickname. Anali's been a nice signing. It seems like a lot of their recruitment is going well. Yeah, and that was a huge win against RSL. Houston at home in August can be very difficult, which is what we learned the back half of last year as well. I'm going to go Orlando Cruz Azul, stick in Liga MX MLS. And on the other side, Cruz Azul were very close to being in that sad trombone category. Very close. Just a matter of a few ball bounces a different way against Philly. But they got through. Martin Anselmi, their manager, was asked whether or not he's sort of like, are you easing your guys in? Is this a moment to gain rhythm for a return to Liga MX? And he was like, what are you talking about? Like, this is the best Cruz Azul team of recent vintage. We invested heavily in the summer. We want to win every game. We're a giant. We're trying to win this tournament. Now they have an opportunity, and Orlando stand in the way. And Doyle, Orlando have been on the precipice against Liga MX powerhouses of late and just sort of heartbreakingly haven't gotten over the line. Yep. But now look like a completely different team than the one we were slagging early in the season as having no punch, no direction, lineup switches. All of a sudden, Cartagena and Araujo are back in their form, the form that made them so special last year. I'll give you all the credit for the Martin Ojeda. You know, finally he's playing, finally he's producing. Outbreak. I know Facu Torres, as we sometimes sort of whisper to ourselves, can look like just a guy. He is not looking like just a guy since that snub from Copa America. And between, you know, Duncan being back and Ramiro Henrique, the preeminent goal scorer in Central Florida, it just feels like a match that's going to be really, really fun. Cruz Azul has a gear they haven't reached. And it feels like Orlando are sort of firing on all cylinders, even when they're down a man.
Can both these teams... So, for my pick, I think that both Toluca and Houston can win this tournament. Do you think both Orlando and Cruz Azul can win this tournament?
Yes.
Give me the pitch on Orlando, besides what you just said, that, like, okay, they have depth up top now, and Ojeda and Facu are sort of clicking. Like, what else is there that we should be looking for?
I mean, I think it goes back to central midfield with them at all times. Like, that to me is the... Of any Oscar Pereja team, if you want to see whether or not the team's playing well, does he have a set pairing in midfield? And are they doing the things that Oscar Pereja deep-lying midfielders do, which is being absolutely ruthless and breaking up play, being very simple with the way that they move the ball? Like, they don't, not trying to be, you know, superheroes in that sense. Like, find the right guys in the right places, remain positionally disciplined, and you're good. I also think that the center back pairing has really taken a step forward. I thought from the start, Brekalo just, it didn't quite have the same chemistry. And that makes sense, because think back on these great Orlando teams. It's two guys that have been together for years. But same thing in Dallas. Like, when he had good center backs who were in form and had relationships for a while, he was successful. Now, this isn't some Oscar Pereja magic recipe, right? Like, this is any good team is going to have these things. But it finally feels like Brekalo's fitting into the group. There's protection in front of them, and Galicia has not given up terrible goals. And that's the thing about Orlando. I'm not a huge El Pulpo, Pedro Galicia, like top of the goalkeeper heap guy, but when he's on a heater, which often happens, where it's like, hey, these last 8 to 10 games have been absurd from you, then you can get something going. And I think they got all these things going. Now, Cruz Azul is going to have the ball in this game, and that actually suits Orlando. So we'll see if Cruz Azul can actually, you know, create good goal scoring chances with the ball, because I don't think that's really happened for them just yet. How about a low key good matchup? I'm going to take two, and I'm going to take the same region, because this is the privilege of hosting. Seattle LA Galaxy, which is a great round of 32, and that winner will play the winner of Vancouver Pumas. I think that's going to be fun.
How is Seattle LA Galaxy in any way low key?
You know, I don't know. Between Toluca, I guess Toluca and Houston might be lower key. I'm just trying. Look, I'm shoehorned in great matchups here, okay? It's low key, high key, all right?
All right.
Fair enough. No cap, for real, for real.
For real, for real.
What's your pick?
Well, I want to talk about those a little bit. Seattle, I thought, were terrible against Necaxa, and they got more bad news with poor Pedro de la Vega, who had to come off after half an hour with what looked like a groin strain.
Oh my God. Just, when he came off and Anders is sitting there and Anders is like, well, at least he's jogging. I thought that encapsulated, like, basically the entire Pedro de la Vega experience so far, which is, he's hurt, but could he come back sooner than we expected?
Yeah.
Like, I feel terrible for the kid. I feel terrible for the club. Like, I hope this ends. But the trend is just, it's super concerning.
It is absolutely brutal. And at this point, it's just like, shut him down for the rest of the month. Whether you guys make a run in this tournament or not, give him whatever time he needs to get this right, because it's been more than a year now of him battling persistent hamstring and groin issues. I hope they're able to sort it out, because I don't think they're a threat to win anything if they don't have that little spark of inventiveness and 1v1 ability on the left wing. And I know we've seen some really good moments from Paul Rothrock. Paul Rothrock has been excellent for this team as a spot starter and coming off the bench, but he's not going to consistently eliminate defenders in isolation. And look, that's what That's what Seattle need from that position. That's why they went out and they got De La Vega. For the Galaxy, it's what you said. Like, Ricky Pooch is absolutely unbelievable on the ball, off the ball, also often unbelievable in a different way. Vancouver, I thought were really good in the group stage. Fafa Picot was on the best scoring run of his career, I think. Weeby, you're muted, so you're trying to talk.
Just
and it's
really
funny.
Just high level podcasting for me right now. Am I wrong in remembering that Tom reported that Fafa wanted out, or somebody reported?
No, you're correct.
And about the time that he reported that, Fafa went on like a fill in the blank, you pay me run.
Yeah, absolute heater.
Super sick.
To be fair. If you look at the MLSPA release, Fafa's not he's not going broke this year. I think his wanting to his displeasure had something to do with playing time, and suddenly coming off the bench. And since then, he's been in the starting lineup, and he has responded like a guy who is not going to be leaving the starting lineup anytime soon.
He responded like a guy that might have been right.
Yeah. It feels like. I still am not a believer in Vancouver's ability to make a run to the semifinals or beyond. I just think they need that one more piece. And unlike Houston, and unlike RSL, who unfortunately are eliminated, they didn't go out and get that piece this summer. And there's been zero reporting I've seen that piece is imminent. Now, Pedro Vite was really good in the second game of the group stage. If he's able to, this is what I've been saying for a year. If Vite is able to up his game, he can, in theory, become that piece. And then Vancouver are, in fact, performing then at a higher level, one that we have yet to see them hit, I think, in their MLS existence.
This is a fun one, too, for me, just on individual player matchups. Memote against Brian White, and then Huerta against, I guess you would say, Fafa at this point. Otherwise, you would probably say Ryan Gauld if he wasn't hurt. We hope he gets back soon. But there'll be two great games. Low-key, high-key, what's your game here?
LAFC versus Austin. And we've gone over LAFC enough. With Austin, they did really well to get through a group where I don't think anybody picked them to get past Pumas and Rayados. And look, it was kind of the same game plan in both games. Even when they went, especially when they went down to 10 men, it was drop your line deep, be willing to concede 20, 25 shots, limit the shot quality. Make sure that you don't just have numbers deep, but you have numbers deep and compact in a way where anybody who's taking a shot is going to have to shoot through six bodies. And it worked. And we've seen teams use that game model to pull off a couple of upsets in various tournaments. It's not a sustainable way to keep winning. It's just not. Eventually, if you're getting outshot 4-1 every single game, eventually the bill comes due. And it's going to be, I think, the same exact thing against this LAFC side. I think Austin are going to give LAFC the ball. I think they're going to have 30-35% possession. I think they're probably going to give up 20 to 30 shots, and they'll be lucky if they get 10. And maybe they pull off another upset. It is a fun thing to see if you're a fan. It's not the way you win an entire tournament. It's just not. And I think part of the evolution that we need to see from Austin going forward, especially now that they have reinforced the squad with a couple of signings, is they have to be a team that can use the ball to control games and be the one who inflicts that kind of fear on their opponents. It's going to be fun to watch just to see if Austin can pull the rabbit out of the hat again, but I'm not expecting it.
You think Giroux is going to play?
I do.
Off the bench, yeah?
Yeah, I think the final 15, 20 minutes, whatever the score is, if they're down 1-0, maybe he comes in the final 35 minutes. But yeah, we'll see him in the second half. I would be surprised if we didn't.
All right, let's talk about the quadrant of death. It's taken us this long. Club America and Columbus Crew, you get your due here. This is insane what the Crew are having to deal with here. We talk about seeding. Well, this is the reward for being the MLS Cup winner. You get Kansas City to start your round of 32 journey. Okay. But Miami, Toronto are on the other side, so it'll probably be Miami. So you get Miami. And then likely you would think Tigres will get through the other side of that bracket. Hell, it might be Pachuca, even if it's New York City. Like, and then one semifinalist comes out of this. One semifinalist. Wilfred Nancy's got to be like, all right, well, we go through the best. Same thing as CONCACAF Champions Cup. And they reloaded today. Right wing back Andres Herrera on loan for River Plate, according to Tommy Scoops. Of course, DeJuan Jones is in. So is Dylan Chambost, AZ Jackson as well. They have room to add more high-level players if they would like, based on their roster breakdown. U22 or, I believe, DP, because they could buy down Darlington Nagbe. Where do the Crew stand right now in your eyes on the eve of their entry into this tournament 3 days from now?
I think this is the best team in MLS. And I know they didn't play like that in the last couple of games before this tournament. And I know that given the lead Miami have, Miami are probably going to win the Shield. And Miami, to their credit, went out and got the exact thing they needed in this window in David Martinez, who has been, I think, very good for them through two games in central defense. But I just think that what I've seen from Columbus at their best this year is better than what I've seen from any other team in North America. And now with these additions that they've made, they have even more depth, which was already a strong suit. They have, I think, more ways to beat you. And it's hard for me to imagine them going out against Sporting Kansas City, certainly. But boy, that game against Miami, if it is Miami, because it's not like Toronto have been bad. Upsets do happen. But man, that Miami game, that could end up standing out as one of the very best games of the tournament.
I was really hoping Pachuca and Toronto would get flopped, but Toronto got the job done. I wanted to see either Miami or Pachuca against Crew. Apologies to Sporting Kansas City. We're basically already writing you off here, and like, go pull an Austin and prove us wrong. But I wanted to see that rematch on, not 6,500 feet in the air and without a, stomach ailment for the Crew. That would have been really fun to see. Who's the favorite out of the group of death? Is it Columbus, or do you think Tigres or Miami could say, hey, hold on, hand up, we're actually the favorite here?
Oh, I think it's all really close. But we saw these three teams in the same tournament, a couple of months ago. And it was Columbus who made it to CONCACAF Champions Cup final. And it's Columbus who I think would have won it if they hadn't been playing on top of a mountain after having explosive diarrhea.
I tried to be a little bit more delicate, but after we heard the stories of Christian Ramirez at All-Star at the SoccerWise event, it's hard to be delicate about the eruption that was.
It was
in Hidalgo.
Yes. I'm not saying that the Crew are guaranteed to win. I think it's really close. Obviously, I think these are three of like the five best teams in North America, so it wouldn't be a shock if either Miami or Tigres came out. And I still think that NYCFC are kind of a fun dark horse as well when they're at full strength.
You challenged me on Orlando. How do they get through this group?
NYCFC?
Yeah, walk me through it. Paint me a picture.
I think if they get their central midfield healthy and all in one piece, and that means Keaton Parks, James Sands, and Maxi Morales all starting, and that means they get a little more dynamism from Santi Rodriguez on the wing, which is, I think, what we saw in the first 65 minutes last night, where he was like more naturally sort of alternating between dropping in and playing next to Maxi as kind of like co-number 10s and stretching the line and running through the lines as more of a just like a goal-scoring attacking winger. And then Hannes Wolf on the other side, like Julian Fernandez, I thought, was pretty good in that game. But like, there's no question Hannes Wolf is the starting winger on the right side for NYCFC. So you have that, and then a super mobile number nine in Alonso Martinez. Like, that's pretty good. And then you have your, you know, they look, it might be time to put Matt Freese back in goal. I'm not saying that the four goals, it wasn't on Luis Barraza last night, but like, Matt Freese has been one of the best goalkeepers in the league this year, and that back line is really good. So it, like, they have less room for error and less margin for, I think, messing around with personnel than the three favorites in this group. But this is still a really, really talented bunch in NYCFC that could end up being a pretty fun dark horse. But also, they could also, like, they could lose their first game in the knockout round 3-1, and nobody would be shocked.
All right, how about a dark horse? So actually, you know what? Before we get to our dark horses, we've talked about the toughest quadrant. Do we want to narrow in on the easiest quadrant? I think you just have to eliminate that top America side of the Western Conference, because you have America, you have Toluca in there, and then I think you add in Portland and Houston, yep. Atlas as well, even if somehow, some way they get to America. I don't think that can be the easiest. Obviously, Cruz is the hardest. And so then you're between the East and the West. On one side, you've got Seattle, LA, Vancouver, Pumas, San Jose, Necaxa, but LAFC, and then Austin. On the other, the two elite teams, I would say, are Cincinnati and Cruz Azul. Then you have like middle of the pack to bottom of the pack in the East, rounding it out. I kind of think process of elimination, that East bracket that Cincinnati, by virtue of their win last night against New York City, got into and topped. I think that's got to be your easiest bracket, no?
I would say so. I mean, Santos, Laguna have been terrible in the Apertura this year. Philly, Montreal, DC, we're talking about teams that are fringe MLS playoff teams at best. Orlando have come alive, but
I mean, they're all below the line, just to put that in perspective.
Yep. And the other team in that will be, what, either Mazatlan or the Revs, most likely.
Yeah.
So neither of those teams are exactly gigantic. And then, so you're talking about really Cincinnati, Orlando, and Cruz Azul. And one of those last two teams is going to be out after the first round.
Exactly. Which is what makes that matchup, you're selling me on that as the best matchup even more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we agree that that's the easiest bracket.
And we'll talk about Philadelphia in just a second. Let's hit Dark Horse teams. And I believe you have a missive to read from producer Maria on her beloved Pumas here.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Maria is as big a Pumas fan as Anders is a Seattle fan. So these are producer Maria's words on why Pumas are the real dark horse. Pumas have not won a single title in 12 years. This is a team that has history, an incredible fan base. She's patting herself on the back as she writes that. Supporting for what's felt like an eternity. This is a team well known for the academy in the 80s and 90s and bringing key foreign players. All of that has been gone for many years. There, she says, no pride whatsoever, no light to shine until now. They have succumbed to being a middle table team and making it through some heartbreaking Ligia matches with a somewhat average team and some good players here and there. But this is the year that it feels like, all caps, the year. Pumas are no longer boring to watch. They have invested in key players in combination with academy players, making it to the first team again. What makes them more of a dark horse is that they're a grande that has lost their crown for 12 miserable years. So you get the idea of what Pumas fans are, of how they're viewing. Yeah,
another way to say this, though, is what makes them a dark horse is that they're Pumas.
Yeah.
They're Pumas. Like the, yeah.
They do not have the ability to go out and just buy the type of talent that Club America, the Clasio Regio teams have, Cruz Azul have, even Chivas have. So they have been able to, or been forced to build from within a little bit more, been forced to be a little bit clever in terms of what they have, been able to shop for in the transfer window. And in Huerta, in Cesar Huerta, their left winger, they have a guy who could maybe be the best player in this tournament. He showed it in the group stage. You cannot handle this guy 1v1. I like Ignacio Pusseto, the right winger that they have, balancing Huerta. Mamito Martinez, the center forward, he's like a traditional sort of target man who gives them a focal point, occupy center backs. So the pieces are there. Collectively, I think they have lower talent level than the true favorites, but a fun dark horse for what it would represent for this great club that has not won a damn thing in a dozen seasons.
Huerta says he's not going to leave Pumas until a title arrives. And this is a guy that could for sure go play in Europe somewhere. I hate to break this to you, Huerta. You shouldn't say things like that. Like I think thinking things like that when you're a player at Pumas, sure. Yes, absolutely do that. Don't say those things publicly. You don't want to, you don't want to be stuck. You might be stuck. And if you leave, then you're going against your word. I'm just saying. All right, how about some dark horses from MLS? I'm going to throw out, like, we've already gone through Houston. Yep. I think they have something to make a little run here. I believe they'd have two straight home games, and maybe more than that, depending on how the bracket works out, to start. I'm going to throw out Philadelphia, and I just want to get your reaction. Can they win it? No. Can they make a deep run in that bracket up there with Cincinnati? That, I think, yes. It feels to me, Doyle, like the Philadelphia Union are inching back toward sort of the hallmarks of the Union over the years, which is great goalkeeper play, center backs back up to speed, combative, physical pressure in midfield, and then just like a relentless list when those moments to break come of going and efficiency. Like they are not going to go out right now and create the level of chances that we've seen some Philadelphia Union teams of the past create. I actually think the best thing that could have happened to them where they were in their season, I know this sounds crazy, was for the Band-Aid to get ripped on Julian Carranza.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was not going to stay. And so I understand holding on to him for as long as you can and trying to milk the most out of that was the best thing. But Ty Barabo coming in and not just scoring goals, but I think having, like, a level of combativeness and physicality out of that position that he's shown, just like a, I got nothing left. Guys, what can I do? Like, I'm going to have to go out here and just like fight like a straight up Wolverine. Feels like he's going for that. And then also scoring goals. I just thought the goal that they scored against Cruz Azul to keep themselves alive was just typical Philly, like over the years of Adeniran chases down a lost cause, somehow causes a turnover. And then when Quinn Sullivan gets the ball, there's no hesitation from your remaining attacking players. There's not like, am I making the run? Are you making the run? Like, what run are we making? Gazdag and Barabo are just like, it's go time. Like, it's like a sprint. It's the 100-meter to a dangerous spot at the near post. And, oh, by the way, the ball bounces around. Kevin Mier makes a big mistake, and here we are. It just feels like they have some ingredients back, and they have a little swagger back too, which they've just been absolutely missing.
Yeah, there's desperation, I think, most of all.
That's a good
word. I think Barabo deserves the most credit for that because he has a different background with this team than literally everybody else that is in the regular rotation. Because all these other guys have come close. They've done it before. Most of them were around in 2022 and, last year's good run in CONCACAF Champions Cup. Ty Barabo did not play a role in any of that. He wasn't even there for 2022. And then you had Sam Adeniran as well. And as you said, it was him. It was Sam Adeniran who chased down that ball and made a play when it looked like a lost cause. Philly haven't had that all year long. They look like a different team. I think they'll be prohibitive underdogs if they end up facing Cincinnati in that second round, in the round of 16. They won't care, and maybe that's what suits them.
And there's a level of familiarity there that intrinsic motivation for so many too. We'll see. That's a very dark horse pick, I would say. All right, MLS season pass on Apple TV is your home for Leagues Cup. There's a free game tonight if you're listening like straight off the jump. You've got New England Nashville to determine the final spot in the knockout round, so check that one out. Then on Thursday, two matches, both West Coast time, so 10:30 p.m. Eastern. pregame, postgame, of course, countdown, and wrap up LAFC Austin and Vancouver Pumas. So that's going to be a really fun one. Thursday, we've got four games, Miami-Toronto, Tigres, Pachuca, Seattle, LA, San Jose, Necaxa, real fun there. And then, I mean, Friday, it gets down. America enters the competition then. So do the Columbus Crew. Cincinnati playing Santos Laguna, and the Orlando Cruz Azul game is on Friday as well. So Friday is going to be an absolute blockbuster. We'll have the coverage right here on Extra Time after the round of 32. Before we get out of here, Doyle, Transfer Zone brought to you mostly by Tommy Scoops. Let's just run through this thing. We have a center back swap between St. Louis and New England. St. Louis get Henry Kessler, younger, more years on his contract. New England get Tim Parker out of contract at the end of this year with a club option for the next season. Plus, New England gets $600K in allocation money. What do you make of this? Is there a winner or loser, or is this just, hey, a right time for both?
It feels like right time for both. From St. Louis's perspective, Tim Parker was a kind of an energy drink soccer center back. And with Bradley Carnell gone and John Hackworth wanting to build from the back a little bit more, I think Henry Kessler probably brings a little bit more quality on the ball. So I totally understand it from St. Louis's perspective. From New England, they've been a soft team. They need someone who's not soft. And Tim Parker is not soft.
Also, just clearing out cap space and long-term contracts helps going out and getting new players.
Yep.
Whether it's DeJuan Jones, who I know Carlos Hill and others were very frustrated to see leave New England. He had a long-term contract. That contract was a TAM contract. Kessler had a long-term contract, and Kessler just didn't seem like he and Caleb Porter were the snuggest of fits. Let's say, seems like a lot of center backs in Caleb in New England have not been the snuggest of fits, but they found a little bit snugger side for both, and New England gets more assets to continue to rebuild. Plus, Lutz Fahnenstiel gave us this quote in talking about the team. I don't even know what this is in reference to. I just want to read it. Quote, "I'm not a robot, even though I'm German. I'm still a human being." Without context, I just enjoyed that from Lutz. Philadelphia Union working on a deal to sign midfielder Donnelly Jean-Jacques from FC Metz. He's played a bunch of minutes in Ligue 1, 24 years old. Makes sense. Either as a six to replace Jose Martinez's minutes when Jose Martinez is out, or as an eight in that diamond midfield. So that one makes sense. Tim Ream is closing in on that Charlotte move, Doyle, and Tyus Magno is going on loan to Corinthians. Any comments there, or should we call it a day and,
I mean,
in my case, go ice my back?
The Ream one is really interesting because presumably he's coming in as a starter, but if there's one team that should not break up their back line at all, it's Charlotte, right? Like Privet and Milanda have been excellent this year in central defense. I think they've allowed the fewest goals or second fewest goals all season long, and their underlying numbers are sort of in line with that. So I get adding quality when you can, but it's just a little bit of a head scratcher as to why, and especially because Tim Ream would be at his best in a team that is sort of front foot and ball dominant, and that's not what Charlotte are. So it's a little bit of a head scratcher. The Tyus Magno one, it bums me out. I liked watching that guy play, and I hope that one of the things that happens over the next couple windows is MLS teams become more active in making moves for other teams' DPs who aren't getting on the field or being productive. An internal market to keep guys like Tyus Magno in MLS, hopefully in teams where they can get on the field and show what they've got. I think that is an important step in the development of the league.
I hear you on Tyus Magno, and when you were talking about that, I was thinking of Julian Carranza going from Miami to Philadelphia. I think the big difference is that Carranza's value had sort of been cratered externally, right?
Yeah.
Whereas Magno, because of his talent level and because of his performances for New York City, still has a price tag where it makes it hard to go with an MLS. I mean, like, who's going to go sign him with an MLS for $6 million or $8 million?
Right. No, it's fair. And Corinthians are giants. They're one of the biggest clubs in the Americas, and they are a launching pad to Europe. But he's at the point where he has said he wants to play in Europe. So I get it. But it is still something that needs to happen for MLS to be I think our goal at this point has to be the best team or the best league in the world outside of that big five in Europe. And there's a path to get there.
All right. Who are the takers for Shaqiri? We've got our DP market open, Doyle within me. No, I'm just kidding. All right. That's it for us. Big thanks to Maria and Anders on the production side as always. And also big thanks to Maria for keeping us updated on Liga MX at the studio.
Vamos, Bubas.
Ahead of everything we do, she's been an absolute gold standard for preparation and knowledge of these Mexican teams. And Anders, yeah, thanks to you as well, dude. I'm sorry about Pedro de Vega and that loss. Dinacox, it is what it is. All right, we're out of here. We will see you at the end of the round of 32. Adios. We'll be right back.